This is an oral history with Henry Hammond in September 2008 at his home in Beaufort, North Carolina. And I'd like to start off with our standard first question. Tell me a little bit about where you're from.
I was born at Fort Bragg. My dad was professional military. And we lived there till like in early, just before I started first grade. I was in six different schools in the first grade because that was the year war broke out. I started in Georgia, ended up in California, and different places out there. Then my mother and I came back to North Carolina. My dad went to the South Pacific. We stayed there until he came back some 2.5, 3 years later. He was then settled at Aberdeen Proving Ground, Maryland, where he could go to Walter Reed Army Hospital once a week. His duty was at Aberdeen, and we went to Walter Reed once a week. Then he got out of the military, and we settled in back in Fayetteville, and he went to work back for the military as a civilian. And so I finished Fayetteville High School, then went on to, Presbyterian Junior College 1 year, and then Wilmington College, and got an associate degree in engineering there. Then transferred to NC State, thinking I was going to finish in engineering. Decided that I really didn't like it, and that's when I switched over to landscape architecture.
Well, who was it that influenced you to change over to landscape architecture?
It partly was Lewis, and partly was Camp Huffner, and it was the difficulty I was having over in the engineering department with them and the math. I was just not ready, prepared to do the math and that kind of thing. And I'm also a very poor English student. I have never learned to spell anything correctly. Lewis used to kid me that they had to check my spelling in all the drawings. The math would be right, but the spelling was wrong. And so that's one of the, Lewis is a fantastic English and spelling and everything like this, and that's how we did, so.
So you started at the School of Design. What year was that?
I'm thinking that was 1955, because I think I finished that at Wilmington and came up and started in January, did like one semester in engineering, and then switched over and did summer school, and from there on in landscape architecture. I remember distinctly, we were the first class to be in the Matsumoto wing, and we were the first studio on the right coming in on sort of the second level there, or the main level of Brooks Hall.
Right. Who were some other people that were in classes with you?
Let's see. I'm thinking that one of the Coulter boys was there. Warren Edwards, I think, was there. Jimmy Klutz was in that class. Since we were first year, we were mixed with architecture groups there. And Sunderland, Jimmy Sunderland, Klutz, we had nicknames. One of them was Sailor, and I cannot remember his full name. Charlie Miller came in that time. There were two Charlie Millers. There was young Charlie Miller and an old Charlie Miller. The old Charlie Miller was a veteran who came in. We had quite a group in there. Our first year design group person was Les Lasky. Lasky was a very, very interesting individual. he taught us a sort of composition. We took that first year or group in there. Joe Cox taught us painting. Duncan Stewart was in and out of that class. We learned to work down in the shop. Jose Rivera came in and did a sculpture class with us one time. And I can't, getting these in the right, correct sequence, I cannot do that right now.
Well, you're doing really good. You're doing fine. So you met Lewis Clark as one of your professors.
Yes, he was my first primary landscape architecture professor. He and Gil Thurlow. Thurlow and I never did hit it off. It's very good friends or student teacher. But Lewis and I really sort of got along. Lewis, I think, appreciated sort of my engineering feeling for different things. And also, I had worked around and in construction, so I always ended up at the end of the project helping to put it on the ground, I think, is where is one of the things that I helped do the best. And knowing that sort of that end of things, I had most of the students had never had surveying, they had never done that kind of thing, and I had.
Well, that was a leg up, wasn't it?
That was. It helped a lot.
Well, how did the office get started from being people in school?
Lewis picked up several projects and he started in his basement over on Mordecai Drive and set up three or four boards over there. The first two projects that I remember was St. Andrew's College and Charlottetown Shopping Center for some reason. St. Andrew's, I worked with Lewis very closely on that because they were building a total new college campus in Laurinburg, North Carolina, and I had gone to school in Maxton, which is very near there, and I knew the incoming president for St. Andrew's, and so it was sort of a natural. I knew some of the people in the terrain in the field for what was going on. They were very smart. The McNair family more or less was footing a lot of the bill there and had given two totally old farms to St. Andrew's, and we took a valley in between and built a lake. The architect for St. Andrew's, or the first architect for St. Andrew's, was Gully O'Dell out of Charlotte. And that was intriguing because Gully was such a... if you've ever been to that office, it was like the whole 13th floor of the Trade Building at the corner of Trade and Tryon Street in downtown Charlotte. And you'd get off the elevator and there was this god-awful purple wall and this plush office that Gully had set up. And so they would design and we would take it and sort of work out what Lewis worked out the master plan and then the little sort of details of walkways and drainage and this kind of thing. That's where I worked, where I fitted into the process.
Well, that project has come down through the history as being one of the first, one of the more important projects on the list of projects. It's mentioned quite a bit.
Oh, it was unbelievable. The other thing that we did, which was intriguing there, is somehow or other, they knew of an old nursery that had gone defunct near Southern Pines. And Lewis and I said, well, why don't you just buy the whole thing and we will inventory the nursery. I spent days down there inventorying plant material, and then we had trying to figure out how to salvage parts of it because we had to prune we had it, a lot of it was overgrown. We had to prune it and let it sit for a year before we could dig it and move it. And we moved the biggest part of that whole nursery down to St. Andrews. Like, they had big camellia bushes, like 8 and 10 feet high. We had great plant material. And then other things that we planted down there, the wetlands plants and this kind of thing, which was intriguing to put together that. Because we never had seen anybody do that before.
I don't think anybody had.
And we figured out how to stabilize, we get the lake to stabilize, and then years later we came back, the beavers had taken over the lake and then started building lodges all out in the lake. So it that project has got a long history.
This beautiful project. Let me ask you about Charlottetown Mall.
Oh gosh. Charlottetown Mall has got one name attached to it that's amazing, and that is Clarence Stepp. Now, Stepp was a nurseryman and plantsman extraordinaire, and ran a little place out across the street from Taylor's Nursery there on 64 in Raleigh. All right. Warren Edwards and several, Warren had a degree in biology, or botany, I believe. Warren had done a whole lot of research for Lewis, and we wanted to do sort of, or they wanted to do sort of different kinds of plant material. Like one of the gardens at Charlottetown Shopping Center was a Palo Verde garden. In other words, it was all desert plants. And Warren had figured out what to do with all of that, and they had found nurseries out in Arizona and Utah and so forth, and had ordered all that stuff. Then we did a tropical garden with like fiddle leaf palms and this kind of thing. And also we did the original bird cages. We had live birds in the mall, in the shopping center, in the mall. Lewis had contracted with Duncan to design some conical looking bird cages. Duncan had figured out the design, and then they had figured out that the Blind Commission, which does fat weaving and everything, they had woven and put the bird cages together. I don't know whether I did it or, let's see. But anyway, we had to come down and get the bird cages, bring them up there and set them up, and then how we got the birds and got them in there. Then it was the middle of the winter when we were putting that project together. At the end, I lived up there with Stepp in the motel with him to help put it, and more or less worked for Stepp. Stepp paid me, and Lewis paid me at that time.
Well, that was good.
Now, I was double dipping in there. And like I would drive the track. We had palms come in closed vans, and I would drive the tractor out and load the palms in the bucket of the tractor, and we would snake the palms down a glass hall into the mall.
Oh my heavens.
And then set them up. And they had come from way south. They even still had tree frogs in them when we brought them in.
Goodness gracious.
And it was just an amazing thing to put that project together. I understand it's considerably changed now. And
did you know that you were doing one of the first enclosed malls when you were at the time?
We knew that it was early on. And we had talked with different ones about other ones, but that's how we were doing, putting that together. There was the desert garden, the tropical garden, the bird garden, then we had the blooming flowers and so forth. We had annuals and perennials that were cycling in. And that sort of, yeah, it was early, but I didn't realize how early it was.
It's like the fourth in the country. Fourth one that the Rouse Company. Do you remember the Rouse
Yeah,
Company?
I remember. Who was the lady?
Dia Paco?
Yeah. Paco. Paco, yeah. I remember her coming in the last couple of days up there and just marveling at what we were putting together.
Yes.
And how we had come together with all of this. And then making some of the things work, like the tropical garden had to be irrigated. The other thing that was strange about that project up there is STEP was not union. The whole construction project was union. And the fountains and the electrical irrigation and all of that, the union electricians and the union plumbers had never done anything like that. So Step and I had to go in and tell them and release them, or get them to release us, so that we could put it together and make it work. And Step was sort of a master of all kinds of trades. He had done irrigation. I had done by then had done a little bit, and understood what solenoids and all of this kind of thing were. And they had never dealt with that. They were just standard union electricians and plumbers and everything. So we had stewardship problems up there. Mm-hmm. Up the wazoo.
I guess. Well, you overcame all that, though. So
yeah, and a lot of times we worked at night up there, because that was when the rest of the workmen were out of the way, and we could tinker with things.
Well, the fountain's beautiful. I think the fountain's still there. I'm not sure if the plant material's still there.
No, I don't think any of the plant material is still there. In fact, I think I cut my teeth on part of that fountain up there. The Kim representative from California, or Kim Fountains, I don't know whether they're still in existence or not, they came and helped us sort of select and choose whatever, and then they helped us a lot on sort of getting set up, and then we would order the stuff in and put it all together and make it work. I think that's sort of the first set of fountains I ended up doing. Oh, this is a side issue. You know the fountain at Meredith College?
Mm-hmm.
I did that.
Oh, that's nice. Very nice. Now, let me ask you this. You're working on fairly large projects at this time. Where is the office now? Is it still in Mordecai?
It was in Mordecai, and let me think how we changed that over to when Kit and Lewis built the new house. Lewis set up the basement for the new office. You come around back and you come in sort of the business office side, and then you'd go on back into there, and there was like one, two, three, there were four or five tables set up there, drafting tables.
Now, was this at Rothgeb?
That was at Rothgeb. And Nigel would ride tricycles in there and ride around and underneath it, and then Kit and Lewis lived upstairs. And that's how we did work out there.
What were some more projects that you were working on?
Oh, Lord. After that one, Cherry Hill was one of the next shopping centers. I never did go to Cherry Hill. I helped on part of the layout for that thing. There was a fountain or a cascade up on that one that I think we worked out. There were some other bi-level issues up there, like they had ramps in different places. And I think I did the calculations for all of the ramps and everything. Let's see. there were some lighting issues too that I can't remember. It's so long ago.
Oh yeah. Well, who else was working with you at the time?
Bill Nichols. I don't know whether Warren had left or not. Charlie Burkhead. There was another young fellow there who went on to finish in architecture, but he worked for us for a while. And that's, I think, about it. Nichols, me, Burkhead, Edwards, and Lewis was the primary office at that time.
Working in the basement of the
working
house.
In the basement on Rothcap.
Goodness gracious. Well, let's see. After Rothcap, you moved to above the Varsity Theater, right? Were you still with them when they moved there?
No. I did not move over there with them. The project where Lewis and I sort of fell out was we were doing different projects with the Bonies out of Wilmington, and we were doing the Cape Fear Hospital. And something had gone awry on the drainage of that thing, and Lewis wanted me to stay and work on it, and Carolyn and my son or something, I've forgotten exactly what it was, but no. My wife was down at the beach on vacation, and I had promised to be down there. Lewis wanted me to stay in Raleigh, and I said, Lewis, I've got to go. And Lewis and I, we just had a parting of the ways. That's when we quit each other right then.
Oh my goodness.
And let's see, that project, they ended up with some crazy stuff down there, like they wanted a first and second floor entry, and they wanted drainage out of the back of that building. And we were having to run pipes at like 0.2%. That's like in a huge pipe. It's very difficult engineering. And to make it be done on a... And then the pipes had to be so big that you had to mound up over them to get... The parking lot was going to look incredible. And I don't know that I ever went back and looked at that project. Because it was nightmare.
It was one of those nightmare jobs.
Right? It was a nightmare job.
Goodness gracious. Well, did you work on Winston-Salem downtown?
Oh, yeah. That, and let's see, who was on... Burkhead and I worked on that one, I think. We worked on Winston-Salem downtown, and also, what was it? The place out at north side of Winston-Salem, where they built the new factory out there.
Oh, I don't know.
Burkhead would know.
Okay, I'll ask him.
Ask him. But when they built the new factory out north of Winston-Salem, we worked on that one. Odell, I think, was involved in that. But that was interesting, like urban renewals type of thing downtown. All the old sort of restaurants or dives where the workmen would come out of the tobacco factories, run down the street and get a hot dog or a pork chop or whatever. All the African-American workers, those were some interesting places to eat and go around up there.
What did you do? How did you change Winston-Salem downtown? What year was this? I forgot what year.
That's got to be early 60s. Early 60s. Some of the problems that I was involved in was trying to get all of the electrical, the telephone, the electrical, everything was up on poles out in front. And the drainage, the town of Winston-Salem had never figured on everything being paved. The drainage was very bad. We had to calculate. I think we had a surveyor up there that we were working with on trying to figure out water drainage. We didn't have enough water systems up there or water pressure to upgrade some of those buildings. All the wiring was overhead and had to be, we wanted to put that underground. And the mechanics and gymnastics to put that was unbelievable. And the structural, I think we had some structural problems too, because we had to do some borings up there that I remember where we would hit like crazy sand layers, if I can remember correctly.
And so, did you close the street or did you leave it open?
I just don't remember how we ended, our final designs ended up on all of that. We, I think, closed some streets, but like third, fourth, and fifth were some of the streets we were working on. And it's just, that's a long way. Because we were working on several other different kinds of projects at that time too.
Did you ever fly in the airplane?
Lewis's plane?
Mm-hmm.
No, never did.
I think from some of the tales I've heard, you were probably lucky.
Oh, I understand. He was treacherous.
He lectured, didn't he? He went to other schools and lectured.
Yeah, he would go to other schools and lecture. I remember he went to Penn or Penn State. Or no, Penn. And also he went to, Cecil Elliott. Did that name ever come up?
Yes.
All right, Cecil was a fantastic designer. He was an architect, and he went to Illinois State or Washington University in Indiana, one of the bigger design schools out in the Midwest. And I think Cecil had Lewis out a couple times. And let me think. There were a couple other. He and Camp Hefner went somewhere, and I can't remember that trip. I keep wanting to say Mississippi or Alabama, one of those. That's so long ago.
Oh, no. When he was gone on lectures, though, and he was still teaching school at the same time of the office is running, how was he as a boss?
Lewis is a boss. He was very strict and wanted you to be very honest and very straight up and wanted you to work very hard. And he would get on your case if you didn't do anything that he felt was correct. I ended up, of the sort of the five people, and I was always the one that was in the field putting stuff on the ground, because I dealt with contractors and this kind of thing. And Charlie and Nichols, they were sort of the chief design thing, but the mechanics and putting it on the ground was my side of the coin a lot. And then Lewis would come out and check my work and see how things were going. And I'll never forget one night we were working on Chemstrand out at the Research Triangle.
Right.
And that was a nightmarish building too. We were going to have sort of a grand opening the next day, and Clarence Stepp was one of my, I had it for a while out there. I had three different contractors going at the same time, and Clarence didn't have room on his truck when they cleared out that afternoon and had left a pile of trash with a wheelbarrow over the top of it. And Lewis called me the next morning. He'd gone out early to look at there's a wheelbarrow marring the vista. And it was right in the middle of, you know, it just left right in the middle of everything because that's where we ended up finished.
Right.
And he just got all over my case. There's a wheelbarrow marring the vista. You can hear him now. And Carolyn has laughed about that forever. And I had to get Clarence or get a truck or somehow get out there and get all that trash and that wheelbarrow picked up.
Wow. Kim Strand was one of the first buildings at Research Triangle Park, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the other nightmarish thing about it, it's a full-blown Kim lab. And that means that the dedicated laboratories in there had to have two or three different kinds of electrical, two or three different kinds of drainage, including glass drainage, because they were handling high acids. And then outside, we had primary, secondary, three kinds of different sewage treatment, and we had to screen all that. We had to have transformers and break down generator protection, in other words, fitting all of that together. That is also one of the poorest pieces of dirt in North Carolina. We had and it was in the middle, of course, again in the middle of the winter, and I was out there. We had a ditch we had to leave open that was about 10 or 12 feet deep, up right up beside the building for a long kind of time. There would be a mud hole within 2 feet of that ditch, and that the soil would not drain out of that mud hole into that ditch. I mean, it just miserable, miserable soil. And when every time it rained, we were just out there in it. We did, let's see, the plant material we brought in for that. One of the things I'll never forget is we brought in a metasequoia from somewhere up in Virginia that was like had like a 10 or 12 foot ball on it. I don't know where that tree is still out there, still alive, but we moved that whole thing, dead of winter, and had to have biggest crane in Raleigh to lift it off the truck and put it in the hole.
That was before the days of Big John equipment, wasn't it?
Oh yeah.
So it was hand dug.
It was all hand dug, and it was on a big flatbed trailer. And then out and back we did dry stream bed because we could not get watering or something in there. And we collected, I've forgotten where we got all those river rocks, but I placed most of those river rocks out there to make it look like a dry stream bed.
Was it before the days of riprap?
Well, no, it was for a visual effect. We also planted bamboo out there, which did not. Lewis and I love bamboo, and I still think it's misbegotten. I think it should be used more and more in landscaping. And somehow or other, it just did not do well out there. And let's see, other plant material. The other problem we had at Kim Strand was we had chosen to use pine straw. And somebody walked out of that building one day and flicked a cigarette over in that pine straw, and it was dead of summer. And we burned like $4,000 to $6,000 worth of plant material out there in just a few hours, or a few minutes almost.
Right.
And so I have never ever loved pine straw again after that.
Well,
it's a mulch material.
What do you use for mulch material?
I like bark. I really do. I like bark a whole lot. And I wished we could get more of it, is cedar bark.
That's nice.
It is really nice material. That's what they build the running tracks out of Eugene, Oregon out of.
Hmm.
Because, see, they've got so much cedar out there.
Right. Well, let's go back to whenever you and Lewis had your little falling out. So you were on vacation. After you got off of vacation, what did you decide to do?
I came back and got a job with Department of Transportation and worked my way in up there. I stayed there 4 years. In fact, I was the head of the Landscape Department for Transportation, and I were the only two registered landscape architects up there. And that was in, I can't remember the dates on that. That's when the Ladybird program came along. And so I ended up, as part of the Ladybird program, running statewide, looking at junkyards, junkyards, landscape plantings, overlooks, and all of that stuff. But that's
that was for the State Department of Transit?
Yeah.
Well, you couldn't have lucked out at a better time to be working for the State Department of Transportation than during Lady Bird Johnson's beautification program.
Oh, God, it was fantastic. It was fantastic.
So after you left, after you were there, what did you do then?
I went out on my own. The politics just, it gets to you down there sometimes. And so I was going to have a partner. Let me think how this happened, ended up. I had flunked out of state and was working for Lewis. Lewis finally ended up getting me a letter to the University of Georgia to get in down there. I had majored in chess and beer drinking, more or less. Crossroads Tavern on Hillsborough Street, there was a back table with a chessboard on it, and Charlie Miller and I used to play. Anybody that played chess down there, chess is addictive if you play it competitively. And Lewis got me, I decided I wanted to finish my degree. Lewis got me a letter down to Hubert B. Owens, the head of the Landscape Department at the University of Georgia. And I went down there, and Hubert said, "We will admit you to the fifth year of design at Georgia if you will pass these three courses this summer." They threw me in graduate ecology under Gaither Plummer, watercolor under one of their artists down there, and something history, I think it was. By then I was married, and Carolyn and I lived in an attic in Athens, and I never worked so hard in all my life, but I Dean's listed those three courses and got in Georgia. I did 1 year there at Georgia. I got a scholarship at Georgia because they had no one who knew how to run a print machine. So I have a University of Georgia scholarship working at Athens, Georgia.
That's wonderful.
And I finished up there, and while I was there, I'd met a couple guys in the class there. When I quit DOT, one of my former classmates at Georgia was doing a lot of public housing all over the Southeast, and he wanted a North Carolina representative to do public housing site work. And he and I were going to be in partnership. But his wife or somebody was an attorney, and they wanted me to be just solely dependent on them. And I said, "Well, I might can get some work on my own." And he wanted to take that over. So that never worked out. So I just went off on my own. And the first project on my own was with Lee Fallon. Did you know Lee? Never knew. Lee was a little handicapped man who did all of Willie York's work.
Oh, that's where that name comes in. Right.
And Leaf, his office is responsible for more designers in the city of Raleigh than anybody else's because he would give them work. And he was the meanest SOB you have ever known in your life. I mean, he would come in, he used aluminum crutches. And if he didn't like what you were doing, he'd take one of those crutches and slam it down across your drawing board and he said, tear it up, start over. He did all of Willie's work. And when the first project I had was he gave me the Woman's Club out at there in Raleigh when it was moved from downtown to
National Drive.
National Drive. I did all the site work on that, including the driveway and the connections to Glenwood Avenue. And that's the first project for me on my own.
Well, that's a nice project. It's still there, too.
It's still there. It's a wonderful old building.
Well, what were some more projects that you worked on through the years?
Oh, just me?
Yes.
I was sort of captive landscape architect for Meredith College for a long, long time. I did the fountain there. Dick did the amphitheater. But
that's Dick Bell, you mean?
Yeah. I redid the amphitheater once or twice just to correct some different things. Dick doesn't understand drainage a lot sometimes. And Meredith College. Then I got into several parks things. I got interested in parks. And my master's degree is part parks and part landscape architecture. I think I was the first one to cross over between Parks and Rec and landscape school. I think Moore has done it since then. And I did Powell Drive Park in Raleigh. I did Henderson Point for the state of North Carolina, which is the big yacht racing thing. Then I did several marinas, and that's what I'm doing now, is I'm pro bono working with the county on their water access situations and some of their marina things.
That's probably one of the more critical issues down here, isn't it?
Oh, Lord, it's unbelievable.
So you get back into politics again?
Yes and no. I'm trying to keep my very first straight ethic.
Well, let's see here. Can you think of any other projects you'd like to comment on?
Projects that I did with Lewis. Let's see.
Do you know, remember how many years you were with him or what?
I was with Lewis off and on for roughly 4 years. And we did, let's see, Charlottetown, St. Andrews. I never was into the Hilton Head stuff. I got out before then. Let's see, we did.
And what years are these that you were talking about?
Late 50s and then early 60s in that era.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, we did Winston-Salem. We did some other things for Gooley.
Were you starting on the community colleges when you were there?
Let's see. I don't remember any of those.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember any of
those. It was probably just a little bit early for that. I think they were in the early 60s, but maybe about mid-60s, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And we did some things in Wilmington. Charlotte.
We'll talk about some more of those as we go along.
Okay.
I'm about to get to the end of my list of questions. So,
okay.
Oh, I know. Did you work on the governor's mansion?
Which way?
I don't know.
When I was... Yes, I did the south side of the governor's mansion. I worked for Department of... In other words, the people take care of government. I did the south side of the governor's mansion. It's that 7 or 8 months I was up there. I had quit and gone to work for... Oh, gosh. That was 1985. And I did... Had gone out of business or quit business or something. Gone down with them for about 7 or 8 months. Could not get along down there at all. And I had done the design work for that, what we called an ice cream garden on the south side of the governor's mansion. And that was real interesting.
Why do you call it the ice cream garden?
The style, one of the things that you'll have to, I've been through the Stipes history course. And Stipes, like history, landscape, architecture. I don't know that very few people have done that coursework. And to work with different periods of things. The style is that steamboat
era. Victorian?
Victorian era. And so what one of the storms had messed up part of the south side, so they had just sort of cleared it and made a big grass plot out there. I did what was then known as sort of a Victorian, which would have been where they had ice cream socials. So I did it in Victorian style. And having worked with Stipe, I've done other projects with Archives and History, like I did the redo of the Thomas Wolfe House in downtown Asheville.
Nice.
And I tried my very best to do Halifax, and I never could get them to do Kathy Verdun. Does that name ring a bell? Mm-hmm. Kathy ended up doing what little was done up at Halifax. Halifax has always fascinated me.
What did they want to do there?
It.
Or what did you want them to do there?
I wanted them to get rid of the old town of Halifax in 1776, or that era in there, was larger then than it is now. Much, much larger as far as population. And I wanted them to restore the old town down to the riverfront. They have gone in and built an elementary school plack dam in the middle of that site.
Oh, no.
And one of these little poorly designed elementary schools. And it's just, it's awful.
Well, that's a shame. That was an opportunity lost, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
While you were working with Lewis, what made the associates' designs different from other landscape architects?
I felt we had sort of a naturalistic approach to a lot of things, and we wanted to do it engineeringly correct and also environmentally correct. I've always had a bent for like different kinds of plant material and learning plant material and using plant manure in different ways. And I think if you will look back, and this is my interpretation, if you will look back at things like Central Park at Olmsted, the greatest thing he did was to drain that cockeyed thing. The drainage in Central Park is a tremendous feat. People just don't realize that.
I hadn't really thought about it myself.
But it's just a tremendous feat. And the different plant materials, and like when he did Biltmore Estates, the plant material up there and the drainage up there is fantastic.
All engineered.
Engineering is a key part of landscape architecture, and that I cannot get a lot of the younger ones to understand.
Well, that sort of leads into my next question. What about landscape architects today?
So many of them do not know plant material. A lot of them do not understand the engineering, the drainage, and this kind of thing, and the lay and the flow of the land. And I wish that could come back a little better. I was on the board of landscape architects for 9 years and helped administer the exam and everything. And I felt that part of it was a weak issue.
Where would they get that back? And is that back to the school design? Well, College of Design now. Is it back to them to furnish the information?
This is my personal opinion now. I think they need to go back and study engineering with engineers. In other words, don't close himself in. Go out and work, learn how to, in other words, take the same coursework that the engineers take, or even more. And then like soils, they're understanding soils. There's the agronomist approach to it, and then there's the engineering approach. There's only one book that I know of that sort of looks at the middle of this. And I think that's one of the key things is understanding working with soils.
What's the one book that you're mentioning?
It's out in my shop outside. Urban soils or urban drainage and something. I can't think of the name of it right now, but it's just a fantastic textbook.
And you went back and you were teaching for a while.
Yeah, I taught after Half Acre. I taught landscape architect, the landscape design over there in the Hort Science Department. Then I went over and taught park planning at Parks and Recreation for a while. I was trying to practice and do that at the same time, and that I never could master that trick. It's just too difficult. And I was trying to do it, and I had, well, it was sort of a recession time too, and I had three or four staff at the time, and it was just too much.
Right. That is quite a schedule to try to do.
How Lewis did it, I don't know.
I don't either. I think he must have been three people at one time. Well, how did what you learned from Lewis, how did that affect your practice?
That's a hard thing to define. Be imaginative, think through, but do it correctly. Be imaginative. Lewis had more imagination and design things that were very, very good. That it's hard to, and he would push you into thinking beyond what normal person would think.
What's the one important thing to know about Lewis Clark?
Just an incredible designer. Just one incredible designer.
And what's the one important thing to know about Henry Hammond?
Make it drain.
Make it drain.
Make it drain. Make it drain.
Well, Henry, that's all the questions I have for today. I want to thank you very much.
Well, that it's been good.
fantastic.